Welcome back to Hoops HD, everybody. This is our weekly Under the Radar podcast. I'm your host, Chad Sherwood, joined by David Griggs,
Josh
Slika, and joining us back again from Bracketeer.org, Rocco Miller. Good evening, first of all, and this is Under the Radar. We're recording it as North Carolina and Duke are playing right now. And David, we don't give a damn about that game, correct?
No, I mean, lots of big games tonight. Really kind of an eventful night. Xavier holding on to win at Seton Hall. What else? NC State needing overtime to win. LSU going down at home. Villanova losing. We're not talking about any of that, though. None of that matters. We don't really like that. We talk about that on Mondays, but we don't like that show. It's a stupid show.
If we're talking about teams that are 8 miles apart, it has to be Idaho and Washington State.
Well, one of those teams. We can only talk about one of those teams. Idaho, it's not fair to call them under the radar.
Yeah, no, it really isn't. let's get ready. This is our Under the Radar podcast where we discuss the 22 non-multi-bid leagues, the Power Five conferences, along with the Big East, the American, the Mountain West, the West Coast, and the Atlantic 10 are generally multi-bid conferences. This year they may not be, but we discuss those on Monday night. We also do not discuss any teams that are ranked in the top 25, at least not directly. So as we're doing all season, pretty much, we are not going to be discussing Buffalo during this show. Right. Everybody else in Division I is fair game in this show, though, correct?
Yeah, they are. And these are the – I mean, you call them one-bid leagues. They're the regular one-bid leagues. I think that there's at least one. And up until a few minutes ago, it looked like there was going to be two that may have sent more than one. But
there may still be with the Mid-American should Buffalo slip up, for example, the conference tournament and the lake. But we like to start off every show with a feature conference. And we're going to start off with a conference that has something that has never happened before in the history of Division I, as far as I know, going on in it. And no, John Slika, it is not the conference that you thought I'd start with. It is a conference that only scheduled 14 out of its 18 games to start the season and is about to start something that they are calling is a bonus play, pod play, something like that.
Bonus? How is it a bonus?
I don't know. Bonus play, pod play, Conference USA. And it's on screen.
Love it. And UAB in sixth place, but in the top pod, as you got it color coded here.
Yeah, I just wanted to point out I did color code for the purposes of this podcast. Conference USA, the top pod is the green, the middle pod is the yellows, and the bottom pod is that brownish reddish color, whatever that is. And we'll be able to follow that over the next couple of weeks with those color codes.
Yeah,
because one of the things is that top pod, that top group of five, will be guaranteed the top five seeds in the conference tournament, no matter where they stand. Even if UAB goes 0-4 in pod play, they'll be the five seed no matter what, for example.
Yeah.
And there's also a possibility we may be adding a fourth color this weekend because UTEP and Charlotte with another loss could possibly fall off of our survival board.
That's right. Yep. But Rocco, let me bring you in here on this. How about this conference? And Old Dominion, actually with a two-game lead as they start this pod play where they've got to play each of these four other green teams one more time.
Well, first of all, I love it, and I'm looking forward to next year. I know the Sun Belt's already announced that they're going to a top three team in pod one and scaling down from there next season, so I think this is going to start to spread. I just love it from the sheer standpoint of, you know, had this been last year, of course this would have big time benefited a bubble team like Middle Tennessee. Unfortunately for the league this year, they don't have a team of that caliber. However, this should still benefit the league because if we do get the auto bid from one of the top five teams and we're starting to divvy up, you know, 12s to 13s to 14 to 15 seeds, that should help their strength of schedule, which a lot of times is a separator, get them onto a higher line, give them a better chance at an upset. And get to the second round. So overall, I love the idea. There was a really big miracle that kind of happened for UAB last week that I wanted to touch on as well, which was for them to even get into a tie with North Texas, they had to win both of their games, and North Texas needed to lose both of theirs. And UAB was on the road at Marshall and WKU, that is one of the toughest trips we would all agree.
This
conference, and they were able to pull it off. But the other side of that coin was North Texas's crazy roster turmoil that took place when they were down in Florida. They only had 7 scholarship players for the first game against Florida Atlantic and ended up falling short there. Then they lost their point guard, Ryan Woolridge, who's one of the best players in this conference. And 4 of the 6 scholarship players left played all 40 minutes against FIU. And, of course, that was too big of a shorthanded situation for the Mean Green to overcome. And all of the stars aligned for UAB to get in that top pod between all 4 of those games. Unbelievable.
It is. And UAB now with that, I don't know that they're going to do very well in this pod. I don't think they're as good as the other four teams in the pod.
They don't.
But they've given themselves a 5 seed. Under last year's rules, they probably would end up with an 8 or a 9 seed at the end of the day, I think.
Right. Another distinction of this league, Chad, and it's something that I don't think many people realize. Well, we realize it. Maybe if you're watching the show, you probably realize it. 4 straight years, a team getting through the round of 64. Last year, we were really big on Middle Tennessee all the way until the end. And when Marshall ended up getting the automatic bid, who was good. But if you would have asked us, can a team from CUSA get through the round of 64, we would have said yes. And you asked us, will it be Marshall? We would have probably said no. We haven't really been ranking Old Dominion or anybody else from CUSA in our top 10. I don't think they move the needle that much, but could it happen again?
I like this Old Dominion team a lot, the way they're playing. Yeah. I mean, now they do have a tough road because they got to play the top 4 teams, but that's the way that this is set up. And beginning with the Old Dominion game, Old Dominion hosting Western Kentucky this weekend.
That's a fun one.
At the start of the pod play here. And I just want to throw one little other tidbit out here about Conference USA. With this pod play, there is the possibility for teams to actually play 4 times during the regular season, including the conference tournament. For example, you're going to see Saturday, Florida International and Florida Atlantic already playing for the 3rd time this season and sitting in the 8 and 9 spots right now. They could have 4 matchups during the regular season. Not something that we see very, very commonly at all. Yeah.
Right. And with their records right now, you could see a 5th matchup in the CIT, perhaps.
Could be. Oh, they could play the CBI and play the best of 3 finals and go to on that note, I guess, you know, the other game in the top pod this weekend is UAB Southern Miss. The rest of the games from the pool play will be taking place just over the last 2 weeks of the season. And as Sleek, as you mentioned, there's kind of keeping an eye on that bottom pod, although with Rice and Middle Tennessee both up 2 games in the lost column, not as exciting as we thought that bottom pod was going to be in the battle for the to see which 2 teams do not even qualify for the conference tournament.
But by the same token, one of the reasons UAB is in the top pod is because they actually swept Middle Tennessee this year.
Mm-hmm. Right. But I guess on that note, why don't we go back and run through a bunch of the other conferences? There was some big news tonight in a conference that we get to fairly early, but we're going to start things off in the America East, I think. Maybe, maybe not. Maybe we'll get nothing. There it is. And Vermont just continuing to roll, picks up a win this weekend at Hartford.
I wouldn't call it rolling, but they did win.
All right, they won by 2, but they continue to win games. You're right. I stand corrected. But kind of the game of the week, even though it ended up being, you know, the better team winning, though, Rocco, Stony Brook went to New Hampshire, who is probably the worst team in Division I right now, and needed a miraculous miracle to pull out the 2-point victory.
I was very surprised by that. I thought you've been talking about New Hampshire all year as a Centenary Award candidate, so I've pretty much written them off. But that game was close the whole way, and they could have easily won that. In fact, all top 3 teams, Vermont, Stony Brook, UMBC, I think they're the class of the league, they all had to sweat against bottom feeders on the same day around the same time.
Yeah.
So I'm all 3 should feel fortunate to come out of that thing without a loss.
Yeah, and take a look at what's coming up this week here, David, to see if these teams can turn things around a little bit. Coming up tomorrow night, Thursday night, Vermont is at UMBC, Stony Brook hosting Albany, and what's been a rivalry game in recent years, although Albany not quite that much this year.
I mean, it's got some heat to it still, but Stony Brook clearly the better team, albeit not in their last game. But, you know, Vermont, UMBC, that one's going to be tough. Vermont has won one head-to-head game against Stony Brook, but that locks them back up. And it basically, if they don't get past that one, you know, it creates a situation where one game separates the top three teams. Stony Brook and Vermont are gridlocked, and it could come down to that last game later on this year to determine who gets home court advantage.
But we also
But how about that, Chad? You know, UMBC playing both Vermont and Stony Brook this week, so they –
And a road trip to Albany, which could be dangerous in the middle there, even though
– Right, yeah.
Good, yeah.
But, I mean, it could be a really big moment for this UMBC team, who's never really had one, at least not that I can recall.
No, they've never done anything good.
Yeah. And speaking of teams in the middle, if you want to talk about potential upset specials now, Hartford, New Hampshire – Hawks better not be looking ahead to their game at UMass Lowell on Saturday, because that's going to be determining who gets the final home game in the opening round for this conference tournament.
Yeah, New Hampshire's got to find a way to lose the rest of their games if they want to capture our centenary award for the worst team in Division I. They cannot play like they played against Stony Brook.
Yeah, I know.
Let's keep moving. Sleek, let me let you take the next conference here, which is the Atlantic Sun, which just saw a major shock this evening before we started the show, as Lipscomb goes on the road down to Florida Gulf Coast, who have been playing a lot better recently, but suffers the what ended up being a 6-point loss. It was actually a closer game than that until the final minutes. It was back and forth all night, but Lipscomb goes down in a bit of a shock.
It's a major shock by this year's standards. Let's not forget, this was actually the championship game last year where Lipscomb blew a big lead early on, but still managed to survive to win down at Gulf Coast. But the Eagles have quietly been putting together a decent run themselves and played their game of the year in beating Lipscomb at home. And as Chad pulls up the profiles, the Flames now have a one-game lead in the conference right here.
Yeah, and Rocco, if we look at this, the remaining schedules for both these teams here, now if Liberty can win these last three games at North Florida, Kennesaw at home, bit of a dangerous game at NJIT, they will be hosting the conference tournament and a chance to play the conference tournament championship game against Lipscomb on their home court.
Yes, they will. And I mean, that'll be a fantastic game. I do think one of the issues with Lipscomb, first off, hats off to Florida Gulf Coast, because that they have a great basketball culture that they've built over the last decade, and that was a great atmosphere tonight. That wouldn't happen at most of the schools in this league, especially the bottom – everything after Liberty and Lipscomb. So credit to FGCU to improving all year, and they earned that victory tonight. But from Lipscomb's standpoint, I feel like they're one of those teams. They've been going 100% balls to the wall all season long. And when you've been watching and following the sport long enough, you see teams like this, eventually they're going to hit a wall. And that just seemed to be the case tonight. They just didn't have their legs there. And they, in fact, the last two times out, they've come out a little flat, and this was This has just been kind of a long time coming, you know. So it's just the wear and tear of the season. The fact that this conference tournament is early, if Lipscomb can get the bid, I think they're going to be a very dangerous team in the tournament, and hopefully they can squeeze into an at-large situation still. But those hopes have diminished now.
Yeah, that they really, really did not need to lose that one.
Right.
Wow. Well, at this point, they simply cannot afford another loss, which includes another loss, any losses in the conference tournament. So not like their season is over by any means.
It's not. And you're still looking at a very manageable game
They won big at Liberty during the regular season. So, you know, they know they can win at Liberty.
Right.
Yeah. Killed them.
The upcoming schedule for this week, we already looked at those important games here. Liberty's at North Florida and hosting Kennesaw. Lipscomb is hosting NJIT.
Yeah.
Let's keep things rolling right on along here over to the Big Sky Conference, where they are not playing to see who hosts the conference tournament.
Yeah,
they're all going to Boise. Wrong.
Doing it wrong.
But at this point, Montana is finally starting to assert themselves after, especially with that big win last week at Weber, followed that up with the win at Idaho State. And now they are two games up in the loss column, three over Weber.
Yeah, that was a good game to watch. And Montana finally starting to pull away. In the way this league is gone, that probably means they'll lose their next four and fall down into about fourth place. But it doesn't matter. It's a predetermined site anyway, at least as far as there's no advantage in the conference tournament. I mean, they would, of course, be eligible for the NIT if they didn't win it. But I like the Grizz. I'm finally all in on the Grizz. I think they're going to run away with it and land on – I guess the 14-ish range if they were to do that.
Well, Rocco, is this Montana team dangerous if they get into the NCAA tournament?
I think so. They have a lot of experience, and they were in the tournament last year. Ahmad Rory is a capable player, probably a power five level player. And Syed Pridgett, Bobby Moorhead, and Donovan Dorsey is a UW transfer that's finally eligible. They've got a lot of experience on this team, and if given the right matchup, they could give a team some fits in the big tournament. I totally see them as the favorite at this point. They've won 9 in a row, so I do think they're dangerous.
John, a little bit of an interesting week. They're at home, but they're hosting their in-state rival Montana State, and then second place team Northern Colorado Monday night.
And Montana State has quietly put together a halfway decent season themselves, at least as far as Big Sky standards go. And then Northern Colorado, who also had a 1-1 week, they're actually going to have to go to Montana. But even if they win that one, might not be enough to catch the Grizz in the regular season race.
No, it's yes. Almost over at this point, I would think, in the regular season race. And if Montana wins Monday night, I think it is over. But
yeah, and you can catch all those games on Pluto TV.
Big South Conference, David, Radford still up 2 games despite a surprising loss to Charleston Southern over the weekend. A very surprising loss.
By under the radar standards, it was one of the more surprising results. And Racco said something earlier when talking about Lipscomb. I think you kind of start to see that across the board with these under the radar teams. You hope it doesn't carry over into the tournament, because you want to see the teams with the best chance of winning a game or competing get there. But you see it all the time. Now, Radford, 4 games left. They got a 2-game lead. They've got a big week coming up against Lipscomb. I know Campbell's still in the mix, but they can pretty much ice it this week despite the loss. And in this conference, it does matter. They would be playing at home.
Right. And Rocco, I think we need to give another shout out this week over to Campbell, to Chris Clemens, who became, I think, is the 9th player in Division I history to pass the 3,000 point mark.
He did, and he's been phenomenal all year, as he has been every year. And he did it again by putting up just a nice 28 points, 16 of those coming on free throws, 16 for 16 from the free throw line. So anyway, Clemens is just a scoring machine, and he finds ways to score even when he's not on a good shooting night, and he keeps his teammates involved. So, you know, if Radford does fall short, I think most of us are pulling for the Camels to be the representative.
Yeah. I mean, from the booming metropolis of Buies Creek.
As we'll get into later on, he may not be the only one to reach the 3,000-point plateau this year.
Yeah, there's never been 2 active 3,000-point career scorers at the same time. There will be by the end of this year, barring something crazy happening. But the upcoming schedule, bunch of games here. Radford is hosting Winthrop on Thursday night, then Hampton on Saturday, and then at High Point Wednesday. So they're on the verge, though, of locking up that top spot in the Big South. John, let me run over to you for the Big West Conference.
And love this league.
And the question we kind of been asking is just how good is this Irvine team who started to really pull away, especially getting the second win of the season over Santa Barbara?
Well, UC Irvine had a game on national TV on Saturday night against the Gauchos and didn't have much trouble, if any, pulling off that win.
And Rocco, who would be the biggest threat to the Anteaters at this point to upset them in the conference tournament? Because I think that's all that's left to their schedule, right?
Right, for the most part. I think Santa Barbara still talent-wise is, but they're in a funk right now. I think Fullerton, you know, they have an individual player in Kyle Allman that can take over a game. But, Irvine's just a great all-around team. They've been doing it consistently all year. Let's just hope they don't hit a wall like Radford and Lipscomb did. during the time that it matters. I'm sure they can lose late and it won't matter, but if they lose in the tournament, of course it's over. So, but yeah, I would say those would be the top two to look out for, just because Fullerton's got the best individual player and Barbara's got three, four really solid players that can get hot.
Yeah, and you gotta note that they've already swept both those teams in the regular season.
Right, and refresh my memory, Chad. Well, I know. I just want to see if you do. I know this format has flip-flopped around. Is it a ladder this year, or is it a straight?
No, it's the conference tournament format in the Big West is the top eight teams qualify. They do reseed in between the quarterfinals and the
semifinals. So it's a reseed. So it isn't a completely standard bracket. Right. Okay.
But upcoming games for this week in the Big West, we get those up on the screen right here. Irvine's games this week. They're hosting Cal Poly Thursday night, and then they've got the weekend off. They don't play again until next week. So just one game from Irvine this week.
Nice break. It's basically a full week off.
Yeah. If they lose at home to Cal Poly, everything nice we just said about them, we're going to retract.
Yeah, exactly.
But I like this Irvine.
They are bad, Cal Poly.
Rocco, over in the Colonial, the Hofstra, nice win, a tough road test at Charleston. They did get the win, though.
They blasted them.
But then on Saturday, something else happened that I just have not figured out.
Well, the only excuse I can give Hofstra is UNC Wilmington, along with Wofford, who we'll talk about later, and Cleveland State were the first three schools to go through senior day. And apparently the Seahawks were jacked up because they came out and they put it on Hofstra pretty early, and then they held on late. They've got a great player that I've talked about before on one of the episodes, Devontae Kaycock, who's his last home game. Put up 18-12. The last time Wilmington and Hofstra met was the same night I was covering a Charleston Northeastern game, and Wilmington actually led at halftime at the game at Hofstra. So there's a really interesting matchup where UNC Wilmington's got the worst, or I think it's the toughest defense against tempo, and Hofstra's got one of the best tempos. So it's just a total opposite clash. Ken Pomeroy had a tweet about it. I'll have to dig that up. But yeah, so it's just a really interesting matchup when these two play, and they could meet again in like a 1-8 or 1-9 scenario. So
yeah,
watch out if they play again, because they obviously match up well.
Yeah, the other game I note for this weekend, a Northeastern on the road at Charleston did fall. It's a tough road trip again. I still like this Northeastern team a lot, but they're also setting themselves up where they may have to play Charleston in the semifinals, and that may be, may be the kiss of death for them there, because have to play that and then play Hofstra the next night, the championship game. Real tough road for Northeastern through the Colonial tournament, I think.
Yeah, and is that format, is that still a Sunday semifinal, Monday final?
I believe so, yes.
It is.
Okay, so they can hope that the Charleston people are a little hungover on Sunday.
And I think all the semifinals and championship are all on CBS Sports Network as well.
Yeah, Hofstra now is – Hofstra this week is hosting Towson and James Madison. Given what happened against Wilmington, I'm not going to say it's an easy week, but it should be an easy week for them.
Right, yeah.
Yeah.
David, over in the Horizon League we should be pulling that up right now. This was our feature conference not that long ago, but all of a sudden, just when we thought that Northern Kentucky had things wrapped up, it has changed and changed drastically.
Yeah, kind of a rough week. They've lost their last two, including at Wright State. Now, again, this is turning into one of the more fun rivalries, at least in terms of the excitement of the games whenever they play. I think that they were both 5 points or less this year. They were both very close last year and the year before that as well. But Wright State pulling even, they're both kind of pulling away from the rest of the conference, a two-game lead with four games remaining with those two locked. And it's important because if they were to face each other again, who's going to wear white? Up in Detroit.
Yeah, we discussed last week the whole fiasco over where this conference strategy is going to be beyond this.
Well, I'll say this, and we've seen it with Manhattan and Iona, another under-the-radar conference that opts to do it at a predetermined site. as much fun as Northern Kentucky and Wright State have been, how exciting would it be if they were playing to try and get home court? And then how much better of an atmosphere would it be if it was at one or the other, as opposed to up in Detroit?
There is actually a white hot team in the horizon from Ohio right now, but it's not Wright State.
Oh, yes.
Not even NKU. It's actually the Penguins of Youngstown State that have won six straight games.
It's six straight wins for Youngstown State for the first time since I could ever remember. I think it dates back to like sometime in the 80s or 90s since they last did that. Yeah. Huge game at Northern Kentucky. Their streak should end tomorrow night, but you never know the way they're playing. Right. Great point there, John. But I also want to actually point out the other game coming up tomorrow night, Cleveland State at Wright State, for one and only one reason. With a loss tomorrow night, Cleveland State will actually become the first team in Division I to be ineligible to be knocked out mathematically from its conference tournament eligibility. They will be off of our scoreboard as early as tomorrow night with the loss at Wright State. So their the fate of their entire season is in the balance.
We need to highlight that. It's time to pull out the survival board.
Yeah, we could have, if you look up there on the website, we have our survival board, list the number of teams eligible to win the NCAA tournament. Could go down by one Thursday night if Cleveland State loses.
Yeah.
Let's keep things rolling here. John, let me turn to you for the Ivy League here, which is, even though it should be a ton of fun with this battle for the top four seeds, it almost looks like it's decided already. Unless go crazy here at the end.
Well, the top two seeds for certain, with Yale getting a sweep of Columbia, Cornell, and Harvard, also getting the rare Princeton-Penn sweep, which puts them really in the driver's seat right now. So even Cornell, who had a loss at Yale, they're still in very good shape because they still have the two-game lead over both Brown and Penn. So the Quakers, needless to say, bad week with the Harvard loss because they are really now starting to sweat just qualifying for the Ivy League tournament.
Yeah, and Rocco, they barely got by Dartmouth also at home. It was only a three-point win. Is there any shot now, do you think, that – I mean, I know mathematically there is, but do you think Penn realistically has a shot to come back and make this top four here?
I mean, I think they get four of the last six at home, right, and that includes Yale, and then they have to be at the Harvard Dartmouth trip. So there is certainly a chance. They've got to win at least four of the six. They probably got to win five of the six. Same boat for Brown. I've been impressed with this Brown team most of the non-conference, and Brown's got the next four in a row at home. So the clock's ticking for Brown, but I think they can win all four at home. So it would be this thing could still get pretty interesting for the
For your Friday night Cornell and Princeton. So you know one of those.
There it is. There it is. The Brown Mouth Cup. The Brown Mouth Cup. The most coveted rivalry at all.
I don't even know. We should probably end the show right on that. David, let's just move on to another conference.
The Brown Mouth.
I'll tell you what, David. There is a conference that we have been ridiculing and laughing at all season, practically. It's been crazy. But we suddenly have one of the most interesting standings I've ever seen this late in the season. They were almost our feature conference for the night. Half a game between first and sixth place, a game and a half between first and eighth place. How about the Metro Atlantic?
The Metro Atlantic failed miserably all throughout November and December. And like you said, there just wasn't much there. But holy crap, are they redeeming themselves. And it's just Metro Atlantic mania. I wish the games meant something other than who's going to get to wear white in the higher seed. But Monmouth, an incredible story after winning just one game, and look at going from Centenary to being in first place, then losing just once and getting knocked all the way down the sixth. I mean, it's just remarkable. Another thing this conference is doing. Oh yeah. What a crazy day.
John, you want to address that Quinnipiac Siena game?
Oh, that was a game that went a triple overtime during the weekend. And I believe the leading scorers for both teams combined were over 100 points, but as David Warlock had tweeted out from NCAA statistics, they were still 10 points shy of the all-time combined record between Pistol Pete Maravich and Dan Issel, who I think were over 110 points apiece in a game involving LSU and Kentucky in the early 1970s. But as it is, it's a big win for Quinnipiac because now it puts them among, what is it, a five-way tie for second right now.
Yeah, and when we want to talk about that Quinnipiac-Siena game, one of the things that I note on that is Siena, number 352 tempo of the nation, the second slowest team. Quinnipiac, not a very fast-moving team either, yet they combined for an amazing 207 points. Cameron Young, 55 points for Quinnipiac, which was a I mean, some of the numbers from this was 46 points for Jalen Pickett from Siena Rocco. This was just an amazing game, especially for two not high-tempo, high-scoring teams.
It was unbelievable. I have no idea where that came from. The only thing I can say is I know that Siena was able to really slow down the pace against Iona earlier in the week when it was 57-52, but they lost. So I'm guessing Coach Christian was just like, screw it, let's just run and see what happens, and Pickett showed off his athleticism. I think he's in line for freshman of the year in the conference, especially after that performance. Yeah, they still fell short after all those points. I think, you know, the over underline in Vegas, this total score went over by 81 points.
But even here, if you want to talk about a team of the week, it may be actually outside of that top six. Because
who's betting? Okay, who's betting on the Quinnipiac-Siena game?
That's a good question.
If you're betting on that game out in Vegas, you have issues.
But let me finish where I'm going here, because Marist, actually, they win at Quinnipiac. They also win at Monmouth. So John Dunn is actually having a quiet turnaround season for the Red Foxes.
Yeah, interesting. They got St. Peter's at home on a Friday game. They should win, and then a trip to Siena, and you know they could be part of this, you know, 15-way tie for first place also.
And look what we got Friday.
Friday. Yeah, Dave, let's address this real quick here. The only matchup of the regular season for these two people, one of the
what?
Problems I have for
no.
them.
No. They have to play.
This is their best rivalry in the conference, and I don't know why they're only playing once this year, but Iona-Manhattan, rivalry week, Friday night, definitely a game worth watching, even if it's in a down Metro Atlantic year.
That is utterly ridiculous that's not protected somehow and that they're not going to play twice. Not only is it the best rivalry in the conference, it's one of the best under the radar rivalries, period, and they're not going to play twice. That's utterly stupid.
And it could be a battle for first place, or at least part of an 8-way tie for first place.
Well, Manhattan's coming off of a really surprising set of results last week when they went on the Buffalo road trip and swept first place Canisius and Niagara, where did that come from?
Yeah, because there they are. They're one of these eight teams that is within a game and a half there. Canisius, a very slight lead right now. They've got a tough trip to Monmouth and then a trip to Iona, so they have a real tough week ahead of them. So I don't know what this conference is going to look like next week, but it should be fun. And you got to remember that way this conference tournament works, you know, of these eight teams, three of them are going to have to play a first round play-in game in this conference tournament.
Mm-hmm.
let's keep things rolling on here to the Mid-American Conference. Rocco, let me turn to you for this league where Bowling Green and Buffalo remain tied now for first place after Bowling Green had a couple struggles this week, but did come up with the win against Akron, at least on the other night.
Yeah, I watched a lot of the game last night. It came down to a last possession, and they got a clutch lay-in, and that ended up winning by four because I think the ensuing inbounds pass didn't touch anybody, so they got some free throws. But the game-winning shot went in with less than a second left when it was tied. So they really sweat that one out. But Bowling Green, you know, ever since they beat Buffalo, they've had some games on the schedule that looked like they were going to be, okay, this is – going to be where they finally slip up, and they've passed every test, including last night. As it stands, they're still tied with Buffalo for the loss column in the lead for the conference, and they've got the tiebreaker. Right now, I think that puts them both in the semifinals either way, and they get the rematch later this year. So I'm intrigued by this Bowling Green team. They seem to be more and more confident every time out.
Yeah,
that wasn't just a game winner for Justin Turner, but also puts him in the 1,000 point club for the Falcons as well.
Yep, and on top of that, this was Bowling Green's 13th home win. That's a record at the Stroh Center where they've been for about 7 or 8 years now. And it is, you know, probably their best season in 50 years on top of that. Yeah, we got to, they've got to quickly mention the West Division there. Toledo, who we were starting to really like, gave Buffalo a bit of a battle Friday night, lost the game, and then just came up completely empty last night against Eastern Michigan.
Yeah, they've kind of fallen from grace a little bit, albeit still in first place. It's of the clearly the weaker division.
Well, they could, end up as the four seed now because they don't use division standings for the conference.
Right, yeah. So I'm not feeling them nearly as much as I was.
The upcoming schedule in this conference for the next week, we do see Bowling Green has a game at Ohio, and then they're hosting Miami of Ohio. So those are the two games to circle, other than the Buffalo games.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think Bowling Green should be able to win those. Ohio's really a free-falling program right now. That you, if you saw, they lost by 47 yesterday and didn't really show up.
Yeah.
But you never know. It's the MAC. Anything can happen.
Yeah, it is. It is. Yes.
Well, as Chad tweeted out, Ohio was losing by 47, but they still almost single-handedly outscored Indiana and Purdue.
John, over the MEAC, Norfolk State now up with a two-game lead after beating NC Central and second-place North Carolina A&T this past week. They're starting to pull away from the league, aren't they?
Well, they're pulling away at least as far as the regular season conference title, and they are actually going to be playing in their own city as far as the conference tournament goes. But as we've seen in the past, that doesn't guarantee anything in the MEAC.
Yeah, but David, look at that. Net is up to 250. Everyone else is in the 300s.
Right, yeah. And
including the 352 and 353 team in the nation in the same league. So congrats to the bottom of the MEAC.
Yeah, and to Stalika's point, it's anybody's tournament because it just seems like crazy things happening. Savannah State, a little bit of they had a chance to win that game earlier in the week, but still kind of one of the hotter teams in the conference right now, winning out of six.
Tied for third in the loss column. Yeah, you know? Mm-hmm. They're right there. They do have a shot. They got the win over Bethune-Cookman Monday night.
Yeah,
they are our team of the people here at Hoops HD. And coming up this week, they are at NC Central and then North Carolina A&T. So they get to play the two teams that they're battling for those top seeds in the conference tournament.
Yeah,
while Norfolk State has the trip to Morgan State, and I don't see them else on there. I guess that's the only game this weekend.
Anyway, that's enough of the MEAC.
That's enough of the MEAC. All right. Rocco, the Missouri Valley Conference.
Save the Tigers, yes.
Save the Tigers. Let's go over the MVC.
Yes.
Or if we want to, I don't know. But we finally have Loyola no longer self-possession of first place. They've been kind of losing games yet hanging on there for weeks now, but they've finally been caught.
They have. Missouri State went into Chicago and grinded out a very tough win. I watched most of the game Sunday to get into that three-way tie with Drake in the loss column. Bradley is also a team that's been hot, and Drake was able to survive a battle with them last night. So as it stands this evening, we are now looking at Missouri State getting killed by Northern Iowa. So much for them.
As we record this, they're down 15 with a minute and a half left. So we can, you can pretty much, but I think we got to talk Drake and Loyola is what we got to go.
Yeah. So my whole Bears script, I'm going to rip that up. But Drake, a team I've enjoyed following this year. I got to see one of their games. They play very hard. They've withstood the injury. Coach DeVries in his first year has been more than impressive keeping this team together. Yeah. They've got a great freshman point guard, DJ Wilkins, that can really stroke the ball, and he doesn't turn it over much. They just play really well as a team, and they get back and do a solid job defensively. I think they could make the most noise out of any team, even Loyola Chicago with their experience, based on what I've seen in the last couple of weeks for NCAA purposes.
Just be careful not to operate heavy machinery while watching these games, though, because you've got, I think, by my count, six teams in the bottom 70 in terms of tempo by KenPom standards.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, you know, if Drake plays Indiana State in a quarterfinal game in the MVC, that would be at least worth watching. You got a couple of teams there. This weekend, Drake is at Illinois State, and then on Wednesday, they're going to be hosting Indiana State. So they should, according to the numbers at least, pick up two more wins, but we'll see what happens. But I have been impressed at how well they've bounced back since the Nick Norton injury. That's
absolutely.
Let's go to the Northeast Conference. And David, you want to take this one here? And this, you know, I guess we suddenly have somebody pulling away again after.
Yeah, well, I mean, you can call it that, but I have a feeling after this week we're going to have a 9-way tie for first.
We currently have a 5-way tie for second. So
right, yeah. So St. Francis, Pennsylvania, I believe they were the preseason or our preseason pick to win it all. Starting to finally pull away a little bit. They got a big game this weekend, could put it even more distance between themselves and St. Francis, Brooklyn.
Well, they picked up that nice win over Robert Morris at home.
Yeah, they did. Well, and looked pretty good at that. The Battle of the Boulevard, or the Battle of Brooklyn, I hope you watched it. It was phenomenal. Every game in this conference is phenomenal. You see the list of games there on the right that you should have watched. And pretty soon we're going to see the games that you need to watch this week.
I think the big head scratcher has to be Mount St. Mary's actually beating Robert Morris at home. So
yeah,
the Mount is actually making a late run themselves, still trying to qualify for the NEC tournament since they're only one game back of both Central Connecticut and Bryant.
Yep, yeah, and that's a big
top eight qualifier. The Mount, who we'd almost written off earlier, is back in the hunt.
Mm-hmm.
The upcoming schedule here in the NEC, as David already said, you're going to want to watch all these games, but SFPA is hosting, say, for instance, Brooklyn, hosting LIU Brooklyn. So they get these two wins, they should be in real good shape for getting that first place finish and be able to host all the games on campus site for the conference tournament.
Right.
The Mount, who John just mentioned, at Central Connecticut, at Bryant, huge week for them also, playing those two teams they're battling.
Mm-hmm.
Rocco, let's jump over to the Ohio Valley Conference.
Love the Ohio Valley.
Where now we've got a 2-way tie between the two best teams. Is that not true?
I think we could say that. I mean, they're definitely the two sexiest teams. I think the next two teams below them are certainly capable of beating them, though. I think Belmont is, they're cruising right now after they survived that tough week a few weeks ago, and Murray State's finally started to get their act back together. They really got derailed at Jacksonville State, but have recovered nicely in the last week or so. Austin Peay, they had to sweat it out against Morehead State. If it wasn't for the efforts of Terry Taylor, I'm sure they lose that game. He ended up with, I think, 42 points and 18 rebounds. It's a fun top four. And then, teams like Morehead and, EKU's knocked off, I think, they knocked off, was it Murray State or Jacksonville State earlier this year?
I think they knocked off Jacksonville State, yeah.
Jacksonville State, yeah. So I mean, the OVC tournament, we've been building up the hype for it. Now there's even more teams kind of showing that they're capable. So it's going to be fun.
Yeah, I remember only the top eight teams to even qualify for this tournament.
Another centenary watch, or not centenary, but survival board watch with Tennessee Tech two games back of eighth with four games to go.
Yeah, but I just want to mention it is a ladder format as well. So the big thing there with those top spots, if you're Austin Peay, Jacksonville State finished third and fourth, you will have to get through a quarterfinal round game to get to a game against Belmont or Murray State. So that's the whole reason to try to get on top, even if the games are not on campus sites.
And I think another thing to pay attention to, if you're Belmont and Murray State possibly facing off in the championship game, both teams could still have at-large hopes, especially if they're able to possibly pick up wins against either Austin Peay or Jack State in the conference tournament.
Yeah, I think Belmont's definitely the best position team for that.
Yeah.
There's not much. None of these four top four teams are playing each other this week. All four of them are at home with a pair of games that they should. So all four of these teams should go 2-0 this week. If they don't, it will be an upset.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I think Belmont, too, just, they actually took a tiny hit with Lipscomb losing today, because beating Lipscomb twice was one of their strongest features of their resume. And now if their net goes down, that kind of impacts them as well. As much as Belmont fans might have been happy to see their rivals.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
The rivals are a little interesting note here, a little quick side note here, even though they are such strong rivals, there was a power outage in Lipscomb this week when the women's team was supposed to be playing against Florida Gulf Coast, and they actually played the games at Belmont's court. So, the two schools helping each other out a little bit despite being rivals. So
yeah, that's and nice. They would, yeah.
John, over in the Patriot League, where we had just decided to give this crown to Bucknell after, you know, they looked so good, they already had the sweep of Lehigh, then they go and they lose a game to Colgate, and suddenly they're in a tie.
Well, losing the game against Colgate wasn't terribly surprising, because this was also another rematch from that Patriot League championship last year, but losing at Holy Cross is what's really left the door open for both Lehigh and Colgate to possibly sneak into home court advantage themselves throughout. But as it is, Bucknell still has a tiebreaker over Lehigh because they've beaten the Mountain Hawks twice. But here's where things get interesting. If Bucknell and Colgate end up the regular season tied, it's really going to depend on who finishes fourth. So if American finishes fourth, Colgate would win the tiebreak. But if Army finishes fourth, then the edge goes back to Bucknell based on head-to-head records against those two teams.
Yeah, well, we've got to look at the remaining schedules for these top two teams to begin with. Bucknell, 2 out of 3 at home. Their only road trip is to Navy. Lehigh, 2 out of 3 on the road. So a bit easier schedule here for Bucknell. But, you know, after losing the game to Holy Cross, Rocco, do we have confidence that Bucknell can win these last three and take that top seed?
Not 100% confidence. I think they should win the two at home, but Army is capable. You never know what's going to happen when you go to the Naval Academy, so it's not 100% safe. And I think Colgate might be best positioned, besides the home court advantage, of course, but roster wise, with ever since they've gotten Jordan Burns back, they've been steamrolling teams, including Bucknell. So he missed their losses to Loyola and Boston U, and is a key player for them. So I think Colgate's well positioned right now from a roster perspective.
Right. And we have seen teams make some crazy runs in this conference tournament, despite it being on campus sites. So,
yeah, I know.
There's the upcoming schedule in the conference. We just saw some of those key games there, but Lafayette at Bucknell at Navy coming up this over the course of the next 7 days here. But David, let me go to you as we turn over to the SoCon. And we've got a lot of stuff to discuss in this league, beginning with, I guess, Thursday night's Furman-Greensboro game, and then following up with Saturday's Wofford-Greensboro game.
Yeah, well, Greensboro had kind of a rough week. They came in with big expectations and thought that, hey, I think a week ago we were talking about how if they get these two, then they're suddenly inside the bubble. Didn't happen, and it didn't happen in a pretty spectacular way. Furman is really I think Furman is really the story here. They're really young, but they've been playing really well lately. And while they're obviously not going to finish first, I think that they're in as good of a position to win the conference tournament. It wouldn't shock me at all. In fact, I'm actually kind of expecting them to win those last three games. Wofford at home, A, the rivalry, B, the fact that they played them so close, it took them to overtime at Wofford earlier, and C, just how well they've been playing lately. It wouldn't shock me at all if they won that game. But I don't think Wofford needs it. If they were to get it, it would be – obviously another really good win, but even if they don't get it, as long as they win those last two, and I think that they will, I think Wofford's fine. Furman, I think Furman can win this conference tournament.
Well let's put aside the conference tournament. I think the bigger question we have to ask here, Rocco, is whether or not Furman can get an at-large bid, especially if they not only get that Wofford win, but I guess we need to mention that Samford may have an impact on both teams at-large schedules here, as Samford's going to be hosting both these teams in the final week as well, and could be a dangerous team. But assuming that Furman wins out, Wofford only loses that one game, do we have a two-bid SoCon, no matter who wins the conference tournament?
Well, I'm going to take it a step further and root for a three-bid SoCon, and hopefully somebody like an ETSU or somebody wins the auto, and that Furman win over Wofford gives them enough to get in. But honestly, just, you know, from doing the breakdown the other day and looking at that non-conference strength of schedule that Furman has, from a historical perspective, that's not going to be a team that is historically considered for a Dayton spot. I think they're going to have to be safely in the field to be chosen, especially since they're a mid-major. And that's sad, but and I hope I'm dead wrong. I want Furman in, trust me. In fact, I was a little bit devastated. Villanova took another loss today, only for Furman's sake.
But aren't they better than that bubble team on the right?
Yes,
yeah.
They
are. Yeah.
Who's a 352 non-conference schedule.
but the problem, Chad, is I don't think the real committee would agree with us, and okay. And that's my concern.
Furman would wax NC State.
I think so too. Yeah.
I think the only way you're going to get a three-bid SoCon would be if a team like UNC Greensboro or East Tennessee State gets the fourth seed and beats Wofford in the semifinals, and then Furman in the title game. That's really, yeah. I think, the only possible way that happens.
I think you're right, John. I think there's really kind of just that one path. But back to Chad, your question on two-bid SoCon. If Furman wins out and gets all the way to the final and loses to Wofford, I think, or just beats Wofford, I think that makes it an easy two-big league. If they lose to Wofford in the final, hopefully they did enough to safely get in, because I really don't want it to come down to those last four spots. Well,
I think if they're going to lose to Wofford in the final, though, they need this weekend's win over Wofford.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, that's a must. Because they back to Samford, they already have the Samford home loss. Yeah. What Samford did with Wofford before, too, they're dangerous for both of these teams.
Yeah, that's why I said Samford's going to have a big impact on the at-large possibility.
I would not be surprised
to see Samford get at least one of these two wins next week against Furman or Wofford. But circle the game here, obviously Saturday, Wofford at Furman.
Are you going to wear the shirt?
I will wear the shirt for the Samford games. I'll wear the shirt for Samford in the conference tournament. It should be fun. John, let me head over to you for the Southland Conference, where for the second week in a row, Sam Houston State had another tough battle tonight. They had a tough battle over the weekend where they lost their first conference game to Lamar. Tonight, they needed overtime to get by Nicholls State. They are still 13-1, but they've not looked as dominating recently.
Not as dominating, but by the same token, Abilene Christian, I think, also had just a single win themselves during the week. So they're still about 2.5 games out of the lead as far as first place goes. But New Orleans also gets the win over Selah tonight. So at least now they're in the number 3 hole right there, which we also have to keep an eye on because the Southland does do a ladder for their conference tournament.
Yeah, Rocco, I know you've several times in the last couple of years have started promoting the Selah team just to see them lose a game at their next game out. It happened again, I think, didn't it?
Oh, I know. It's just I got to stop talking about them. I've got some good loyal followers down there, and they're fun to chat with. But they've got a feisty team. Their best player, I think, is 5'7", 145 pounds, and he just has a heart of a lion, and he drives to the lane. It's when they actually beat teams, it's pretty fun to watch. But yeah, there are nights where they just get completely outmatched, and this New Orleans team's a sneaky team. They rack up a lot of wins.
Yeah. Coming up Saturday, Southeastern Louisiana at Abilene Christian, one of the games worth circling here. Coming up next week, Wednesday, Sam Houston State at New Orleans. Could be another game worth watching in this conference, though. Mm-hmm. David, though, let me give you your favorite conference. Let's go over to the SWAC.
Oh, the SWAC. Prairie View running away from it. It's the Prairie View Invitational, although
Texas Southern was down big to Jackson State actually Monday night, made a nice comeback, ended up winning it by 12. So
yeah, I still think there. Texas Southern, despite like the little dip that they took, the best team overall and the one that I look to get through. But Prairie View will again, like with I think it's 6 games remaining, they're on the best path to finish first.
They are in terms of their upcoming schedule here for the Panthers. Should be popping up on the screen on the right-hand side there any second. Now, they're going to be hosting Mississippi Valley and Arkansas Pine Bluff, so I don't expect them to lose either of those games this week. And actually, Texas Southern has the same schedule. I guess they're travel partners, aren't they?
Yeah.
Okay. Rocco, over in the Summit League, we talked about Mike Dahm a little bit earlier, but he is in the next week here with a shot at getting into that top 10 and getting that 3,000-point mark as well, just like Clemens did. But the team itself had a tough game Thursday night.
They did. In fact, they had two crazy games.
Saturday, also.
So Omaha had a possession down by one. I think there was about 6 or 7 seconds to go. It drove the length of the floor, got a clean shot, and it went in to lose in heartbreaking fashion. This Omaha team, by the way, they've got a player, Jackson, that can really play. They've got a good starting five. I think that's probably going to be our Summit League final, the way things are shaping up, and I think it's going to be a good one. Omaha hasn't lost in a long time. And South Dakota State, I'm sure that was your next question. North Dakota State game, big rivalry. South Dakota State's down by 17 in the second half. Rallies all the way back because we know that all they do is shoot threes and some start going in. And they made a critical decision. I think it was North Dakota State fouled with the up by three, and it backfired because they missed – there was a missed free throw. A ball ends up in the hands of David Jenkins, local kid from where I'm from. It banks in a half-court shot.
Half-court bank shot. Yeah. It was an amazing shot. Go look this one up. Go Google it. Take a look at it. It was just an amazing shot. This is why you don't foul when you're up three, right?
Yeah, I know. And you can't leave a shooter open like that.
You really can't. But, incredible win for South Dakota State. Omaha, though, won five in a row now, so they're very dangerous too. And it's going to be interesting to see how this last 2 weeks of the season plays out.
It really will be. This league's been surprisingly more exciting than I thought it would be.
Yeah,
and senior night tonight for Omaha, by the way. So special shout out.
Yeah, the upcoming games for this week: South Dakota State this weekend is going to be hosting their in-state rivals there from South Dakota, while Omaha's got the trip to North Dakota State.
That'll be good.
John, over in the Sun Belt, should be popping up on the screen any second now. There it is. And Texas State has now got a one-game lead over Georgia State, and the rest of the league is starting to fall away from those two teams.
I think I've also lost times how many times Texas State and Georgia State have been going back and forth as far as first place and second place goes right here. So this week it's the Bobcats' turn to now have a one-game lead over the Panthers, but sweeping the Arkansas trip did do wonders for them.
Yeah. Finally, somebody made a statement here, even though neither Little Rock or Arkansas State are that good, David. At least they did get that 2-0 road trip to do something this week,
which is not that's been a rarity in this league.
So. Arlington, on the other hand, started to fade off the face of the earth. They were right up there near first place. They got swept in that road trip. So, not a good week for
Texas Arlington. Texas State and Georgia State, if it plays out, it's going to be fun seeing them go at it and hopefully meeting in the conference finals.
And you know what tomorrow night means, right? Hot, hot, hot upset alert.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, Georgia State.
Cue it.
Is at App State, Georgia, and Coastal Carolina this week, while Texas State hosts the two Louisiana schools.
Yeah, I'm intrigued to see how the Cajuns do on that Texas trip. They've gotten to rest up because they had Monroe last week, and they beat Georgia State before that. I've been reading up a little bit more on the Cajuns lately. They've got everybody finally healthy. They were predicted to be a top team in the league, so they could be positioning their roster really well here for a Sun Belt tourney run. So we'll see how they hold up on this tough Texas trip.
All right. Let's take a look at our very last conference of the night. David, let me let you start off on this one here, Western Athletic Conference, where New Mexico State, not only did they get by Utah Valley and Seattle this week, although Seattle gave them a bit of a almost surprising battle. And also, it was, you went over Texas A&M International last night, so don't forget that.
Yeah, well, the game in Seattle was an inexplicable trouble. And again, it's when New Mexico State plays up to their ceiling, they're really good. They have a high ceiling. The problem is they don't always play up to it, but they've been winning. We got two games. They've clinched. No, they haven't. They're not mathematically. There's four games left and they're three games up, but they've swept both those teams. So they'll clinch the tiebreaker if they win one more, and they'll clinch outright if they win two more. And I think they win out all the way through the conference tournament. They're good. They're dangerous. I mean, you don't win 23 games if you're bad, but this is a team that is capable. They're the best equipped team to win a game in the round of 64 by far out of anyone in this league, and it wouldn't shock me at all if they did it.
Right, but Rocco, the Seattle team, though, has had some injury problems or getting healthy again. Could they be actually a dangerous team when they get to Vegas?
Well, they have a really interesting schedule. So, yes, they're 1-9 in the league, and I'm sure everybody's written them off that is just glancing at the standings. But interestingly, they have 5 of their last 6 at home, and that can give them a lot of confidence. They get teams like Grand Canyon and Utah Valley, UMKC tomorrow, which will give them good tests and maybe some confidence if they can win those home games. The only road game left is against our Lancers, which is also a test. So if they can win maybe 5 or 6 of these games, obviously they'll improve their seeding just a little bit, put themselves in a little better position to make a run in the tourney. They were 12.
Well, you know what? I would argue that if they are in the 6th or the 7th seed, that's the best spot to be, because then you're on the opposite side of the bracket of New Mexico State. You want to be on that 2 seed side of the bracket and not in the 4th seed or the 5th seed to have to go through New Mexico State early.
I agree. That's also 3.5 games you have to make up on UMKC, who actually had a pretty good week themselves with home wins against Grand Canyon and Bakersfield.
Yeah, this league suddenly got deep until you get to Chicago State, but even Chicago State's been reeling in some big JUCO recruits of late, so watch out for them next year.
Really, JUCO recruits not doing so good job reeling in any victories, and yeah, they are definitely on our watch list for the Centenary Award for the worst team in D1 this year.
Worst net right now.
This week, New Mexico State is hosting a Rio Grande Valley team that has been surprisingly competitive this year. It actually gave New Mexico State a battle at home earlier this month. So want to keep an eye out on that game Saturday.
Yeah, and Rio Grande Valley won at Grand Canyon, which is, you know, one of the tougher home court advantages, of course, in all of UTR.
All right, let's run through our top 10 list here. Under the radar top 10 list, we've got a handful of honorable mentions. These are teams that did not actually make the top 10, but teams that did receive votes. Real quick, those teams include Old Dominion, East Tennessee State, Bowling Green, UNC Greensboro, not making the top 10 for Greensboro after that 0-2 week. Vermont, not making the top 10. I did not agree with that, but the rest of you did not like them as much as I did. And David, Texas State even got a vote.
At least
I mentioned. Came from you.
Yeah, I think I had them 11th, so they're going to mention.
Right. Hofstra, still in the top 10 at number 10, despite the loss to Wilmington. So coming in at number 9 this week is UC Irvine. Still getting a little bit of love.
I almost like them.
Liberty at number 7, now the leader in the Atlantic Sun.
Yep. Sorry,
at number 8, number 7 is Yale. Number 6.
I like that Yale team. I could see them breaking some stuff. And there's New Mexico. I like that team too.
New Mexico State there at 6. And number 5 is going to be Murray State out of the OVC, the second best team out of the OVC. The top 4, I think, were almost unanimous across the board, not only the 4 teams, but in the order they came in, with Lipscomb being 4th after the loss tonight. They actually dropped a little bit. But number 3, Furman. And the top 2 teams, Belmont, and obviously number 1, and a team that may not be on this list next week if they beat Furman this weekend is that Wofford team.
Yeah, and that one's going to be fun. That one's going to be rowdy. That's one of the more exciting, not just under the radar games of the day, but games of the day.
I guess on that note, it's time for some final thoughts. And Stalika, why don't I start off with you?
One of the fun things we were doing last year when we were tracking Cal Baptist, we were keeping an eye on the NCAA Division II bracket. This year, we could be tracking 3 possible teams as they prepare to transition up to D1 over the next couple years. One team is Mary Mac, who is going to be in Division I in the Northeast Conference next year. They're currently number 4 in the East region. And then some other teams of note would be both in the West, which are going to be UC San Diego checking in at number 6. And actually, let me just make a slight correction. Dixie State is number 8 in their region, but it's actually they moved to the South Central this year because they switched conferences from the PacWest, I believe. I forget what conference it is, but they are more Colorado-based now.
Okay.
So the RMAC.
They're the Rocky Mountain Athletic Conference?
I believe so.
Yeah. Okay. Well, those are a couple teams we're going to be following. Mary Mac more so next year, but we'll keep an eye on those other two as well. Definitely you know, see who else comes along the way here too. But there was some talk about Metro State, but I think that they have no interest in moving up to D1 from what I understand now.
Yeah.
Rocco, you're up next.
Yeah, so after Lipscomb's lost tonight, and, you know, based on what we discussed with Furman's scenario earlier, I think that leaves us basically with a scenario where the last realistic UTR team that could steal in that large bid would be Belmont, should they lose to probably Murray State or one of the or Jacksonville State perhaps in the final. But I don't even like that scenario because that would give them a third loss. So let's just say they lose to Murray State. I think the Bruins, based on what the committee told us at the bracket reveal, would be very, very close to the cut line. They do have a top 100 non-conference strength of schedule. Their net rating is in the top 60, and if they get all these wins up until Murray State, you would hope that they blow teams out and improve that a little bit. But they do – and they do have a 10-3 road record, and I think they get a couple more road wins if they win out. This is now kind of the primary focus, I think, from a bracketology perspective, is how do we get Belmont into a right side of the bubble situation. I think they're there as of right now, but of course we're talking about if they add another loss. So I think the spotlight turns from Lipscomb to the Bruins now.
Well, I think you got to remember, though, from a fan standpoint and from a game standpoint, what everyone wants to see is not Belmont in this field. They want to see Murray State in this field because be able to see John Morant, who's probably going to be the number two or number three overall pick next year in the NBA draft in the field. So what we've got to really find, Rocco, is a way to get both these teams in there.
Right, and that's Murray State getting the bid and then beating Belmont in the final.
And, you know, there might be an argument should Murray State lose to Belmont in that final but win the rest of their games. I know that their strength of schedule is a lot worse, but there's maybe an argument there, even if it is the we want Morant in the tournament argument.
There's no argument.
Yeah, okay. They only have one win in the top two quadrants, and their net rating's lower, and the strength of schedule, of course, as you pointed out, is tough. So it's a tough sell for me, but hey, if you have the power to pull it off,
I want to see it, but I agree. The way to go to get there is to have Murray State get that auto bid.
Yes.
David,
yes.
Why don't you go ahead and finish off the show so we can go back to watching North Carolina beat up on Duke.
Right, and along those lines, I just wanted to draw some attention to this. It is the NCAA tournament. Well, the Hoops HD NCAA tournament survival
board. Right there on the website, right there.
Yeah, they're on the website. It's on the website, and what this is, it's a remarkable, almost like it's just a prolific tool that is there for the selection committee to use. It tells them exactly what they need to be doing and who they need to be looking at, and I couldn't believe it, but we could be – we've been scrubbing it as we go along each week we go through. We've actually locked some teams in there. You see Duke, they're in, regardless of what happens, regardless of whether or not they win the night or win for the rest of the year. They're in. So is Virginia. So is some other teams. Most of your under-the-radar teams, the vast majority of them, are just in normal text, which means that they need the auto bid to get in. There's still some exceptions, like if you see their Lipscomb, Liberty still in italics, we'll at least look at them. But I can't believe where this week we could see that number go down from 349 to 348. It's already time to where teams are going to be dropping off a little bit. So, again, we will keep it updated for you. Any survival board game, if you read the daily write-ups, gets top billing. So tomorrow, I'm glad you pointed it out, Cleveland State is on top of everything else.
Yeah, most important game of the night, Cleveland State, because their entire season, the entire city of Cleveland is going to be paying attention to whether or not they can stay alive with a huge upset win at Wright State tomorrow night.
Yeah.
The state of Ohio, big battle. Sleeka, you're an Ohio guy, big battle. I mean, is this making top headlines there?
Oh, I would imagine. I mean, they're making headlines down here where I'm at.
One of the headlines was from a couple weeks ago when Handy Handerahan fell off the board.
Handy is off of the board, but however, he is still serving as the as a player for Louisville, the head coach for Nevada, the commissioner of the Pac-12, and a few other roles. So,
The Pac-12 committee. Handy, we're going to see him. He's going to pop up a lot during championship week.
I think he's also the strength and conditioning coach for George Mason as well at some point here. But on that note, I want to thank everyone for joining us. I'm Chad Sherwood. We've got David Griggs, John Stalica, Rocco Miller. Make sure you check him out at bracketeer.org as well. I think you're updating those brackets pretty regularly at this point.
Yes, and, a couple times a week. A
couple times a week. And but on that note, we will be back. I think we've got another podcast coming up tomorrow night. We're going to be building a bracket, and we've got more content over the week. So check out the website, and we'll talk to you again real soon.